You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, February 21st, 2018.
The officers were out on a call and there were shots being fired at the officers, and my husband had dirt flying up in his face because the bullets were so close.
Advocates with Black Lives Matter raised their concern with city government at the Bloomington City Council's town hall last night. Council invited members of the public to share their concerns and support for the Bloomington Police Department's acquisition of an armored car. Members of Black Lives Matter packed the city council chambers to express their concern with what they call the militarization of police departments. The spouses of BPD officers, including those who would use the armored car, also turned up to express their support for the purchase. Among those who addressed the at times raucous crowd were Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton and Police Department Chief Mike Dekoff. We'll hear from supporters and protesters of the armored car later on in the broadcast in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, it's tax season. Our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware, warns of new forms of tax fraud people are using to claim your tax returns. More about tax refunds and scams coming up later in the program on Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The detention of an African-American family and two children in Bloomington over the weekend is spawning debate over active shooter threats to schools, community policing, and race. A 10-year-old and an 11-year-old Fairview Elementary student posted threats to another Fairview student Saturday. A former high schooler shot and killed 17 people in South Florida. Bloomington police were reportedly made aware of the threats on a social media platform Instagram by a Fairview teacher. Officers responded by investigating at an East Side Bloomington residence where they discovered the BB and airsoft guns the students had used to threaten their classmate. According to the Herald-Times, several adults and children were removed from the residence. Police reportedly detained three members of an African-American family who allegedly refused to cooperate with officers. The two children who allegedly made the threats were also detained. Monroe County Community School Corporation spokesman Andrew Clampett says schools take any threats against students, faculty, or teachers seriously. Clampett says MCCSC is holding two meetings to address community concerns over the potential for school shootings.
Monday and Tuesday, March 5th and 6th, we are holding two discussions on school safety protocols. They're open to the public, free. One's at Bloomington High School South, one's at Bloomington High School North. They're on Facebook, they're on our website now. We just posted those earlier this morning. We take all of those types of situations very seriously, and each one is dealt with on a case-by-case basis, you know. Whether it be a rumor or something more serious, we take each one of those very seriously, as we should.
Clampett says the meetings will address acts of violence as a whole and what parents, students, and teachers and administrators' options are going forward. As of this report, it's unclear what, if any, disciplinary action will be taken by MCCSC or Fairview Elementary towards the two elementary school students. The African-American family's detention was raised by Black Lives Matter activists during last night's City Council town hall as another example of mistrust between black communities and police departments. BPD spokesman was unavailable for comment for this story by deadline.
Richland Bean Blossom Community School Corporation is planning to renovate and expand its facilities through three projects. RBB has plans to renovate Edgewood High School auditorium, create more classrooms, and upgrade its outdoor athletic facilities. In a special session of the RBB School Board on Monday night, Superintendent Mike Wilcox said the auditorium has not been updated since it was built in 1983. The project will update the facility's lighting, seating, and sound system. Wilcox has a second project dubbed the Connector Classrooms, will help Edgewood Elementary and intermediate schools accommodate anticipated growth. RBB's bond counsel, Jacob McCollum, described the project.
This project includes the construction and equipping of classrooms in science, technology, engineering, art, and math labs, which will connect Edgewood Primary School with Edgewood Intermediate School, and will include certain other related improvements, including but not limited to general improvements and energy savings improvements to Edgewood Primary School and Edgewood Intermediate School.
Wilcox cites the movement of Steinsville Elementary students to Edgewood schools and development of I-69 as two drivers of growth. The Connective Classroom project is expected to cost $4.8 million. McCollum says a third project, estimated to cost $4.7 million, will upgrade RBB's outdoor facilities.
This project includes the construction of improvements and upgrades to the bleachers, football and athletic fields, dugouts, and field house, all located adjacent to the high school, together with the construction, renovation, and improvement of locker rooms, the press box, the concession stand, and other related renovations, improvements, and upgrades.
Superintendent Wilcox justified the project, saying previous renovations did not include any outdoor facilities.
And we have reached a point to where safety is an issue with those, from everything from our fencing to our bleachers and all, and also curb appeal with our updating of facilities that have faded and weathered, and also that was the major reason for addressing this.
The athletics facility upgrade has been a sticking point for some Steinsville parents, as the RBB school board decided this year to close Steinsville Elementary, northwest of Ellettsville, citing high operating costs. Katrina Essies is a parent of two Steinsville Elementary students. She asked the RBB school board to consider keeping the Steinsville school open while it constructs its new project.
My kids are still heartbroken over the whole closure thing. And we find out that you guys are in the process of doing new construction for a new school, which is going to cost more money than it is to keep Steinsville open. So instead of cramming our kids into a school that's already overcrowded, and we're going to have bullying issues because our kids are different than EIS and EPS, you can say that they're not, but they are. Our kids are special. Our kids are unique. Our kids are used to smaller classrooms with one-on-one, and we're not going to get that over at EIS or EPS. So while the construction's going on, why don't you allow Steinsville to stay open till the construction's done? Because it's going to be 2 to 3 years before that's done. So why not give us a shot for 2 to 3 years to keep our school open? You guys have the capability of reversing the call that you made. And I know for myself that if Steinsville is still to close, that myself and a lot of other families are pulling our kids out of the district. So that's money you guys are losing, and that you're going to continue to lose, because we're taking our kids to McCormick's Creek, where there's smaller class sizes, just like Steinsville.
Esty says she represents a number of concerned parents who feel the closure of Steinsville Elementary is unnecessary.
It doesn't need to happen. Why do they need a brand new sports complex? I thought our kids' education was more important, and it should be.
The board did not reply to Estes during their meeting. The three projects combined are projected to cost a total of $10.3 million. The three projects will be funded through a single $10 million bond. RBB will break ground as early as this summer, beginning with the renovations at the athletic fields.
The Indiana Department of Transportation is funding a $4.3 million renovation of Yellowwood State Forest roadways. The renovation projects of Yellowwood Road and Yellowwood Lake Road in Brown County are expected to close or restrict traffic in the State Forest this summer. NDOT spokesman Harry McGinnity says the roadway should make a big difference for people heading to the State Forest when construction is completed.
It's going to be a whole lot easier to get to the state recreational area and to the lake and things like that with the new paved roads that we've done to the south. and the improvements that we've made at the creek crossings. We've a lot of erosion control there. There's been in the past a lot of flooding. I think things are going to be a whole lot better, much better access, not just for the people who go there for recreation, but also for the property owners that are around that area. So I think they're going to really appreciate this project once it's done.
McGinnity says the improvement projects will be carried out by a contractor, will not asphalt or pave current gravel roadways in the state forest.
This is a two-year, two-phase project. The first phase was done this past year, and it was fairly similar dollars. We had to rebuild quite a bit of stretch of road there, and we also built the longest bridge in Brown County, a 300-foot-long bridge over Salt Creek, as part of that. And that's because of all the flooding and difficulties they had with the road down there in the creek. And so we did some rerouting on that road. That was this past year. So this coming year, we're going to be working mainly in the northern section, and that would be from the boat ramp parking lot at Yellowwood Lake North.
McGinnity said he could not comment on any impact logging in the Yellowwood backcountry may have had on roadways around the state forest. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Last night, advocates for Black Lives Matter and concerned community members came to the Bloomington City Council chambers to voice their opposition to the Bloomington Police Department's acquisition of an armored car. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton and BPD Chief Mike Dekoff both spoke before public comment. City Council members stated that the town hall was for them to listen to their constituents' and residents' concerns. Dozens of community members spoke against the purchase of the Lenco Bearcat armored car, while the wives of several officers stated the purchase was important to their families and the safety of their husbands. At times contentious and divisive, with some community members speaking off the microphone from the crowd while others addressed the council, the town hall lasted for over 2 hours. Here are excerpts from the community members speaking for and against the purchase of the armored car.
My name is Reverend Forrest Gilmore. I'm the executive director of the Shalom Community Center and community minister of Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Bloomington. That's old times. And I'm not representing either of them today. I'm coming as my own person. So I am a white, straight, well-educated, gender-conforming, middle-class man. And if you talk about a picture of privilege, that's me. And one of the things that I've been fortunate enough to learn over the years is that in instances of recognizing the privilege that I receive, one of the privileges that I receive is that I don't have to think about and don't have to recognize the challenges that people experience when they experience sexism, racism, homophobia, et cetera. That's not something I see. I don't witness it. And because it's not happening to me. And I think a powerful lesson that I've learned around that is that just because it's not happening to me does not mean it's not real. I'll say this, another privilege that I tend to enjoy is that because I don't experience it as real, my natural tendency is to think that my experience is right. So I've been forced, fortunately, into a position of recognizing two things. One is that I need to listen a lot more to people in poverty, people of color, people who are oppressed in our society. But even more so, I need to trust the experiences that they tell me that they have.
Good evening. I'm Jennifer Brooks, and I was horrified by discovering the purchase of this vehicle in a community like Bloomington that loves to position itself as progressive and ideal. There are three places that I associate vehicles of these types: Ferguson, Missouri, Palestine, and Standing Rock. And in those three locations, what we witnessed was those vehicles being used against mostly brown and black bodies. Over and over again, we see that the militarization of the police is going disproportionately against non-white communities. And so the tone deafness of this community that nobody said in this process, I wonder if perhaps this is a bad idea, is absolutely unbelievable. We in this country have inherited a legacy of white supremacy. We did not create that system, but we have inherited it, and we have to deal a lot more honestly and proactively with what that means, particularly a community like this that is predominantly white and that believes itself to be progressive. What does that mean to have inherited all of the attitudes and the legacies of white supremacy? That's where this tone deafness comes in to me. It's impossible to reconcile being a community that puts forward an MLK Day. We put that forward, we wear it on our sleeves so passionately, and we don't even think about the way that a vehicle like this has disproportionately been used against brown and black communities. And that's not acceptable to me. I want our community to do better. We can do better. It's not hard to get educated on what the legacy of white supremacy is. It is currently Black History Month. We talk about what black culture is. We don't talk enough about what white culture is. And the speaker before me liked to talk about civility, and this idea of sort of a well-managed civil society is white. That is a white cultural attitude. And it dismisses the lived experience of black and brown communities.
Hi, I'm Brad Swain. I'm the county sheriff, and I thought I'd come over and share some thoughts and my insight. One thing I want to share is... One of the things that I wanted to share was that the CERT team also includes members of other law enforcement agencies, including deputies that work for me. So it's not just one agency that this vehicle would protect.
Yes, but all the
teams.
Yeah.
Take our lead.
Yeah, give my allies. Come on now. If we'll engage in this process, you can engage in this process. Let the sheriff speak.
Thank you.
One thing I'd like to point out is we've had a deputy shot at just a few miles from here, and his car was shot up. He had to return fire and wounded the man. He survived. I've never heard of Sandy Hook and some of these other communities until something tragic happened. We have a lot of dangerous weapons out there. We have a legislature which wants to take away the gun permits, where gun permits aren't issued to people, constitutional carry. Keep in mind that also is taking away the discretion of chiefs and sheriffs of deciding who in their community is dangerous, should have a permit revoked or not even be allowed to apply. Those are the things that we're dealing with. The other thing is that when we have a very dangerous situation with military-type weapons, we don't have the legal authority to call in the military. These situations have to be addressed by local law enforcement. There are constitutional provisions that keep military from being involved. So, yes, there are some military aspects to what we're doing, what we have to do, but we don't have the legal authority to call in a SEAL Team 6 or something. That responsibility rests right here with local law enforcement. If someone has a 50 caliber rifle and is shooting people from great distances and has armor piercing rounds, your local police are the ones that are going to have to deal with that situation. Somebody shooting up a school, local police will be the ones that have to address it. Thank you.
Hi there. I'm Andrea Geisbert-Williams, and I come from a little different standpoint. I am a spouse of the incident commander on the CERT team. Of course, there's a lot of emotion in my viewpoint, but I did take a little time to pull some numbers and look a little bit of history. And what I found was that about 10% of the felonious deaths that take place in police call-outs take place in a SWAT call-out. And from my own personal experience and some of the information shared by Chief Diefkopf in the presentation he gave shortly a couple weeks ago, he talked about the 17 incidents that occurred in 2017, the 15 in 2016, many of them including a standoff with armed suspects, suicidal people, confrontation with armed suspects, invasions with home robberies, and all of them using lethal force. So in essence, 32 times over the last 2 years, my husband entered a highly volatile situation willingly and without hesitation. He's a very ethical man, he's a hard worker, and he's committed to his job. From my standpoint, where I am is he leaves the house, and I don't know for 24 hours, 32 hours, 36 hours, if he's safe. And the possibility of bringing in something like this gives me a little bit more comfort about the fact that he has a way to protect himself. I know there was at least one situation where they had to call in an armored vehicle from Indianapolis and they waited over an hour. And in the course of that wait, there was a death that possibly could have been prevented if they had the right tools to go in and protect that person. So, again, my standpoint is from an emotional place where I want to ensure that when my husband leaves the house and enters these situations willingly that he's fully protected and that there's a security there.
You've been listening to select excerpts from last night's Bloomington City Council Town Hall about the purchase of an armored car for the Bloomington Police Department. Last night's full meeting is available online from CATS, Community Access Television Services.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar-powered generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Nothing is certain except death and taxes. Good old Ben Franklin came up with a lot of wise sayings, and that's one of the most famous. Income taxes aren't due until April 15th, but right now there's a new and very dangerous tax scam going around. You are most definitely at risk for this one because the swindlers already have your personal information. the Internal Revenue Service just issued an urgent warning after discovering that fraudsters have also stolen information from accountants and others who prepare tax returns. Now, what they do, and have been doing for some years now, is to file a fake tax return in your name. Since they have your Social Security number, date of birth, address, and everything else they need, the tax return goes through, and the IRS issues a refund. If the check or direct deposit goes to their own account, different from yours, the IRS watchdogs can spot it as possible fraud. But now, the bad guys have started having the fake refund sent to you. You get a check, a real one, from the IRS, or money shows up in your bank account from the IRS. Then you get an email, a letter, or a telephone call, often a pre-recorded robocall, from the crooks. They claim to be the IRS or maybe a debt collection agency working for the IRS. They tell you that the refund is a mistake and demand that you send back the money to them, of course. They threaten you. If you don't send the money right away, you'll be charged with criminal fraud, be arrested, or even have your Social Security number blacklisted. This is very dangerous because you get real money, and it really did come from the IRS, and you really do have to give it back to the IRS within 21 days. So if you get a tax refund before you filed your return, or a refund that isn't the amount you put in for, call the Internal Revenue Service immediately or go to their website, irs.gov, and search for Returning an Erroneous Refund. There are very specific instructions you must follow to give the money back, and you only have 3 weeks to do it. This is a big pain in the you-know-what, but if you don't do it right, you'll be in for a much bigger one. Now, the best way to protect yourself is to beat the crooks to the punch. File your tax return as soon as possible. If you hire somebody to do your taxes, choose somebody local you know in person, or a reputable firm that's been around a while. And remember, the IRS will never, ever call you on the phone. So if you get a call, it's a crook. These days, nothing is certain except death, taxes, and the fact that sooner or later, the scammers are coming after you. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by Scott Schmadeke, Ben Lumsdaine, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. You can be part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org. Stay tuned for the Shortwave Report with Dan Roberts, a weekly look at headlines from around the world. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online.